The Local Administration and Veteran Affairs Subcommittee will come to order. Members, please remember to speak into your microphones. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chair Toledo.
Here.
Vice Chair Harding. Democratic Ranking Member Goff Marcel excused. Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Sorry about that. Bartleman.
Here.
Chaney.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Fetterhoff. Gilombardo.
Here.
Joseph excused. Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Mello.
Here.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
And Woodson. A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. Please make sure cell phones and other communication devices are turned off and or placed in silent mode. If you have a laptop, please be sure to turn the sound off. I also want to remind members to speak into your microphone when voting to ensure our administrative assistant hears your vote. And for those members of the public who wish to speak on a particular bill, if you have not already done so, please make sure to complete an appearance form and give it to a staff member. Members, today we have 7 bills. Finally, we will now take up House Bill 465 by Representative Soroy relating to United States Armed Forces. Representative Soroy, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, committee members, and thank you very much for having me today. The United States Space Force was established on December 20th, 2019, when the National Defense Authorization Act was signed into law with bipartisan support, creating the first new branch of our armed forces in 73 years. The establishment of Space Force resulted from widespread recognition that space is a critical national security mission. House Bill 465, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, is there something wrong? Can you hear me? All right. House Bill 465 brings Florida statutes up to date with the creation of the newest branch of our armed forces by recognizing Space Force, along with dozens of other references to other branches of our military. Additionally, this bill updates statutes with name changes of 2 specified former Air Force bases to Space Force bases, Patrick Space Force Base and Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, which I'm honored to have in Brevard County. Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, we haven't received any public request comments. And is there anyone in the audience that would wish to speak on the bill? Okay, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Seeing none, you are recognized to close.
Wave close. Thank you.
Having wave close. Tamara, please call roll on the bill.
Representative Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Chaney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcel excused. Harding?
Yes.
Joseph excused. Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 465 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we'll take up House Memorial 63 by Representative Wilhite relating to recognizing veteran suicide. Representative Wilhite, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm so excited to have a bill up
today and be presenting this bill. So thank you for the honor of having myself and Representative Smith here, my co-prime sponsor on this House memorial. Members, you may remember last year, Colonel Smith and the members of the Veterans Caucus, I made some comments about how this is real, my personal interaction with a veteran of how this is real and how this is happening in our country today, and how that we know as a legislature we should be doing more for our veterans in Florida, let alone at the federal level. This House memorial just encourages the federal government to add additional funding and support veteran suicide of our armed service members when they come back from serving our country, acclimating into society and trying to be a part of it, and the difficulties and the struggles that they encounter, whether they're post-traumatic stress disorder, whether they're alcohol or substance abuse, or the numerous things they're dealing with, but we're still seeing a rate of over 6,000 veterans a year taking their lives. And that's sad because some of these are preventable. Many of them are preventable. That if there were more opportunities for them to reach out and seek help, it is our burden to try and help them do that. And so with this memorial and your support, we're going to urge the Congress to add additional funding to the VA and make sure that the President, the Speaker of the House, and the President of the Senate are aware of the situation. And again, this is an effort to make sure that Florida is the most friendly, veteran-friendly state in the nation. That is the bill, the memorial, Madam Speaker, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the memorial? Seeing no questions, we do have a public comment from Natalie Kelly with the Florida Association of Managing Entities, who is waving in support. No additional comments. Is there any debate, members? We are now in debate on the memorial. Seeing none, I would just like to, Representative Woodson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep, for bringing this bill, this good bill forward. We can never do enough to prevent suicide or mental health issues with our veterans, and I fully support this bill. I appreciate you coming forward with it. Thank you.
I also want to thank you for fighting for our veterans and continuing to bring awareness to this very important issue. And you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your indulgence, Colonel Smith would close, if you don't mind.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. And this will be the easiest vote you take this session. And I can say that because you've all voted for this memorial before. We passed it, didn't quite move far enough in the Senate last year. But we've resolved that, and we intend to move this forward. And again, we're just asking the legislature to speak with a clear voice from the state of Florida, which has 1.5 million veterans, the third most veteran densely populated state in the nation, to speak with a clear and strong voice that the services that these military members have earned through their honorable service just do what you've promised these veterans that you would do, and that the Veterans Administration provide the services. That's really all this bill does, is allows Florida to speak with a strong and clear voice to the federal government that give the resources to the veterans in Florida that they need to turn back the tide of suicide. You know, we probably all heard that number of 22 deaths a day. Well, thank goodness that's actually down, but we're still down, but we're still at 16 a day, and that's 16 too many. So I just ask for your support on this bill and allow us to speak with that strong, clear voice for Florida. Thank you, and with that, I close, Chair.
Representative Smith, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the memorial.
Representative Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Dillombarda?
Yes.
Goff Marcel excused. Harding?
Yes.
Joseph excused. Killebrew? Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika? Robinson?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Memorial 63 reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we will take up House Bill 471 by Representative Roth relating to the town of Lake Claire Shores. Representative Roth, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. This is a bill that I ran last year. I'm calling it a glitch bill. This bill provides a legal description of an area of approximately 33 acres that lies contiguous, adjacent, and almost completely surrounded by the present municipal boundary of Lake Clark Shores in Palm Beach County. And this provides that this area shall be considered an enclave for the purposes of municipal annexation. And one final point, if passed, the town of Lake Clark Shores and Palm Beach County would have to agree on any future plans for annexation. Ma'am, that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, we have one public comment card. Richard Pinsky with the town of Lake Clark Shores is waving in support. Thank you. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Roth, you are recognized to close on the bill.
This is a classic local bill, and thank you for your support. I waive.
Thank you for being brief. Representative Roth, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the bill.
Representative Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gillambardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcel excused. Harding?
Yes.
Joseph excused. Killebrew?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 471 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Chairwoman.
Now we will take up House Bill 45 by Representative Morales relating to educational opportunities for disabled veterans. Representative Morales, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for listening for this bill. I'm Representative Daisy Morales, and I'm so excited because we're back to do our bills. I'm here and repeating this bill that actually passed last session. This is House Bill 45, and I will have Representative Christopher Benjamin is the prime co-sponsor, and he will present this bill.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, ranking members, and the committee as a whole. We brought this bill before you in the last session and unanimously voted to have the bill pass and move forward. This bill deals with having our veterans receive an education which is completely paid for. We ask that when a veteran, military benefits do not pay the whole sum of their education, and we're talking about 100% disabled veteran, when his or her education is not completely paid for by the military, that we, the state of Florida, shall pick up the bill for that education. And so I told you before, imagine a soldier who is newly serving, is sent to war and is hurt in that war, hurt to the point that they're 100% disabled, but have not served yet enough to get 100% of their education benefit from the military. This bill will allow us to again show our veterans that we've got their back, and we will pick up the slack. And so I ask for your favorable support, as you've done last time. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have one public comment card by David Cullen with the Sierra Club. But you wave in support. Just joking. members, we are now in debate. Is there anyone wanting to debate on the bill? Representative Woodson, you are recognized.
I guess Yes, I'll debate tonight again because this is about our veterans. And I thank you so much, both reps, for bringing this bill forward again, because we do not stop for our veterans until we get a positive result. So I really appreciate the fact that you are fighting for our veterans, where they have made the sacrifices for us, and it's only fitting that we made sure that we take care of them, just like what Benjamin said, we have our veterans back, and we do 100%. So I hope my colleagues and I, we all would support the bill. Thank you so much.
I also echo those comments. Thank you for being persistent in filing this bill again and getting it through the finish line. So, Representative Morales, you are recognized to close on the bill.
I just want to thank you, and I'm waiving my bill. I'm waiving.
Representative Morales, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Federhoff?
Yes.
Gillenbarden?
Yes.
Goff-Marcel excused. Harding?
Yes.
Joseph excused. Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes. 16. By your vote, please show House Bill 45 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you to all the members, and I miss you.
We miss you too. We are on a roll. Next, we will take up House Bill 403 by Representative Gillenbarden relating to local ordinances. Representative Gillenbarden, from your desk, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. This bill, local ordinances, does a couple of things. First, it kind of lays out the process when an ordinance is created and how somebody who's filing a complaint against that ordinance and how that process works from the time that, in this case, it'll be the big business impact statement is put out to the complaint to at the end where possible attorney fees can be recouped at the end. This does not include Florida building codes, Florida fire prevention codes, growth management, or emergency ordinances. The second part to this bill is the business impact statement. And business impact statement is really a transparency piece for when an ordinance is proposed. They need to let the business community know or the community know how financially it's going to impact them, what the ordinance does in relation to the cause and effect of the ordinance and different components of it, and that is the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Daley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gillenbarden, just a couple questions if I can. So in starting on line 108, we talk about having to prepare a business impact statement. Ideally, who in your mind is preparing that business impact statement? Who's paying for the cost of that business impact statement? And do you have a rough idea of what kind of cost we're talking about?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. So the business impact statement can be created by the local government. Obviously, they can hire, they can hire somebody. There are going to be, and I've been talking with the League and with the Association of Counties, and we've been talking about different, there's different ways that we actually provided them a side-by-side of some of the proposals that they have and that what we have. So so that may change a little bit, but essentially it's going to be created by the city. They're going to need to come out so they're going to need to come out with a statement of the public purpose, the statement of reasonable connection between the public purpose and the expected ordinance, good faith estimate of the number of businesses it's going to affect, the analysis in which the proposed ordinance is likely to deter or encourage the formation of new businesses, and then there's a few other things that are in there, such as some of it scientific, which is not applicable. In the analysis to which the ordinance may impede the ability of businesses. So that's kind of the layout, and that can be, that could be done by the business or by the city, by the economic impact or the economic development office, so or the CFO. So it just needs to be done, and it needs to be posted. So that's the
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the response. On that same line, line 108 again, it says each, before the adoption of each proposed ordinance, so that to me sounds like all. So what if it's clear from the drafting of the ordinance that it's something that's not going to have an impact on businesses? What if it's something internal, the duties and responsibilities of the city manager, the city clerk, the city attorney? Are those still ordinances? I mean, in my reading, unless there's a carve-out that I haven't noticed, those would all still be subject to this additional requirement, cost, time, all of that.
You're recognized.
Again, it won't impact any growth management ordinances, emergency ordinances, Florida Building Code, or Florida Prevention in this current form right now. As I said, we have side-by-side going out right now, and we're talking with the League and the County Commissioners.
Recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in line 117, we get to reasonable connection. What do you consider to be, because unless I've missed it, I don't see a definition, what do you consider to be a reasonable connection between the public purpose and the expected effects of the ordinance?
You're recognized.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the line 117, it talks about a reasonable connection between the public purpose, but I've not noticed the definition of reasonable connection. So what in your mind is a reasonable connection between the public purpose and the expected effects of the ordinance?
You're recognized.
So I think the public purpose, so I'll give you an example of plastic straws and paper straws, right? So there needs to be that there's an expected ordinance, and what's the reason for that ordinance, and then how it's going to impact those businesses. So like a plastic straw is about a quarter of a cent versus a paper straw, which is 2 cents. So they're going to have to lay out all of those things, and what's the, you know, so.
Recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I only have two more. I'll be as quick as I can. So when you jump over to line 144, we talk about the county must suspend enforcement of an ordinance that is subject of an action, including appeals challenging the ordinance's validity. My understanding is how it works today. If somebody wants to challenge an ordinance, they can do so. They can file in court. And they would have to, if they want to suspend the enforcement of that ordinance, would have to go and get an injunction. Right, a court-issued injunction, you have to meet certain requirements, and the court ultimately decides to hold it up. So in this case, it looks like we're just skipping that step. We're taking that decision away from the court, and we're saying, hey, if anybody files a claim, which, by the way, folks, it doesn't take much to file a claim. It could be $400, and it could be a frivolous claim for that matter. But in that case, if I go and I go ahead and file that suit, regardless of the merits of my own case, that automatically stays the enforcement of that ordinance. So is that correct? We're kind of shifting. We're going into a different kind of continuum here. We're taking it away from the courts to say, hey, you have merit based on your case, so I will issue an injunction, which is the case today, to this that just says flat out, any case that's filed that asks for it to be stayed can get it stayed.
You are recognized.
Yeah. So if they put a claimant in, it says 20 days of the effective date in the ordinance, and that's when that applies.
Follow up.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Please repeat.
So if an ordinance is filed, they file the ordinance, the claimant has 20 days, and within that 20-day period, if they file the complaint within that 20 days, that's what you're referring to, correct?
You're recognized.
Yes, Madam Chair, but I think my point is the process that one would go through to challenge an ordinance today is different than what we're doing here. We're basically streamlining the process and saying, hey, even if this is a frivolous claim, a bad actor, somebody who wants to mess with the city, goes and pays the $450 filing fee, brings a claim against this new ordinance, it's automatically stayed, it's automatically suspended for the entire duration of that claim. So the initial claim, any appeal, anything like that, that could be 18 months, that could be 24 months.
Yeah. I always go
ahead. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, but it also, we all have docketing priority, so the docketing has to go. It's an expedited process.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Final question, Madam Chair, and thank you, because that was a good segue, because that's the next issue that I have. Line 155, we're talking about telling the court that they shall give these type of cases priority over other cases. Is there any other, and forgive my ignorance on it, are there any other laws on the books that you're aware of that do this? And secondly, I guess I would ask, is it constitutional? How is that not a separation of powers issue when generally the Florida Supreme Court deals with procedures and policies and we kind of stay out of that lane and telling them, you know, to prioritize cases?
You're recognized.
I mean,
I'll look into it, and we could talk further about it. All I know is that the intent of the bill is to ensure that once an issue, once a complaint comes up, that it does have priority so they can move through it quickly versus kind of what you said earlier, kind of stalling it. So, I'd love to chat with you more about it. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Harding, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I think my question was answered in a couple of the back and forths, but I think just for clarity, what are we solving? And can you give an example of a scenario of what we're solving?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we constantly come up here and do these one-off preemptions over and over and over again. It always seems to be a fight. This will allow the local governments to really just hash it out with the businesses and keep it at the local level. We're just simply with this bill creating the guidelines and the kind of the rules of the game. So I think after this bill, we get this bill, and obviously we have a lot of work to do on it. And we're again reiterating that we're working with the league and we're working with the county commissioners, we're working with Senator Hudson and all the stakeholders involved. But I think after we get what a good product is going to be in a final, we're going to see less of that, less of these preemptions that come up, these one-offs that impact the business. And so I think that's what's going to do.
Thank you. Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to my colleague, actually, for asking a few questions that I was going to ask. But I have one question. Would this bill stop someone or an entity from coming to Tallahassee and seek a preemption? That's the clarification that I need.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, we can still do preemption, but if things are done at the local level and there's a process for it, and if the courts get involved, or if a city or a municipality or a county puts out a business impact statement on, we'll just say plastic straws, banning plastic straws, and the community is okay with it, then, I don't know what to tell you, but we can still definitely do preemptions. This does not eliminate us from doing preemptions.
Follow up? You're recognized.
So if that's the case, why do we need this bill then?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to minimize the preemptions. Like, this will reduce. I think this is a great bill, and eventually, I'm hoping that everybody kind of jumps on board eventually with this, because it will reduce the amount of preemptions that we have to do.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Seeing none, we have several public comments. Richard Templin with the Florida AFL-CIO wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, everybody, back to Tallahassee. The Florida AFL-CIO, we represent 500 plus local unions across the state of Florida. And as many of you know, and you've seen firsthand in your community, our local unions are very engaged in their communities. And over the years, they've worked with faith-based groups, community organizations, local businesses, all types of people in the community to come together and create things like local hire preferences, the use of registered apprentices so that they can get their work experience on public works projects, responsible wage ordinances, incentives for solar retrofits, affordable housing. These are all things that came together because communities came together and got them passed. And I'm going off what was my script here for a minute. And these are also the same areas that year after year after year, a business interest in the state come to Tallahassee because they don't like these. Communities came together and passed them. They like them. They wanted them. But if somebody doesn't, they find it much easier to fight the fight at the local level to come up here to Tallahassee, where the people aren't here, the people aren't in your face, the community's not in your face, but the lobbyists are. And so that's why preemptions have become so popular. And now what we're hearing is that we're going to stop all these preemption fights by creating a blanket preemption, a preemption that is carried out not by the legislature, not by local governments, not by any single elected deliberative body, but by an individual with $400 to file a case, and then maybe a court. I can't tell you how many years I've been doing this and how many years I've been hearing about activist judges and activist courts and that we should let elected officials make these decisions. So this really is, I mean, at the end of the day, and I was going to get more into the specifics of the bill and some of our concerns about it, but some of the comments that were just made just kind of confirms our biggest fear about this legislation and a few other bills that are moving through the process. This is seeking to create a new avenue for preemptions of anything that local governments and their communities want to do that some, and I stress some, because in most of these cases, the business community's on board. It's just a few minority individuals who aren't, who have a lot of power up here, but that what we're trying to do is create a new avenue for preemptions that goes around you, the legislature, that goes around local governments, that goes around the needs of the community and the wants of the community. And remember that those leaders that have been working on these policies around the state over the years, they're elected by the exact same voters as you are. And so we really want to urge you to dial this back, if anything, and find a way to target specific problems, a specific issue, and not simply create a blanket preemption on anything that can be carried out by anyone that bypasses the people that have been elected in this state at your level, at the local level, to do the will of the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Templin. Next, we have Ida Escamani from the Florida Immigrant Coalition. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ida Escamani, representing Florida Immigrant Coalition, as well as Florida Rising, that might not have appeared on my card. We do oppose this bill as it's currently written, and to the sponsor, I apologize not having a chance to talk with you beforehand. I echo some of the sentiments of Dr. Templin. We ultimately believe Floridians should be able to pass local policies that meet the needs of our communities without state interference. And the Florida Constitution grants local governments broad home rule authority in this state. And this bill is essentially utilizing litigation to pass an omnibus preemption bill to chill all various kinds of local policies that are crafted by directly impacted communities in coordination with their local officials and the business community. What was not mentioned in the questioning that I want to highlight is in line 57 around that these different lawsuits are on the grounds of the ordinance being arbitrary and unreasonable. This is very broad language, very subjective language. And then when it comes to how do we define that language later on in the bill, it also has those magical words, but it's not limited to. This is really a Pandora's box. Our concerns are around working people, communities that are historically ignored and marginalized. And the impact of this bill is wide ranging and could impact future living wage ordinances, wage theft ordinances, tenant protections, hiring programs centered around disadvantaged communities, incentive programs towards women and minority-owned businesses, municipal broadband, public health measures, all at risk by this because one business might have an issue. And again, this definition is so broad and up for interpretation, and it's just a very dangerous precedent that this sets. And, you know, this is about people's, their health, their wages, job training, their safety. It's all at risk by this kind of really broad, legislation that utilizes litigation to effectively chill and preempt all various types of local policies and laws. So we ask that we stop this this path of state interference. We start protecting our local freedoms. This is about the power of communities. If y'all know the work that I do in Orlando, Orange County, I'm constantly butting heads in my local government. But that's the beauty, is that people should have the power to make these decisions at the local level. It's not about the power of local electeds. It's about the power of our communities and our wages and our public health and our safety and our benefits and our job trainings. And so we do ask that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Escamani. Do you have a question, Representative Overdorf?
Yes, question, please.
You're recognized.
Thank you for appearing. Is it possible that a local government could, in fact, make a regulation that would go against the Florida Immigrant Coalition? And wouldn't this give you a tool in the toolbox to be able to, again, carry on your mission with a local government in the local setting?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the really critical tools that as immigrant communities have, particularly migrant farm workers and outdoor workers, are wage theft ordinances, which this would effectively chill and preempt in the future. For those, to your question, it's hard for me to think of one, but if there is, because we're a nonprofit and advocating for communities, so I'm not sure if the business impact statement would impact this. Now, so I don't know if I have an answer to that question in the sense of the direct services that we advocate for. There may be a circumstance where some sort of private industry that perhaps a conservative local government is pushing forth, that then they could challenge that perhaps. But in our mind, the consequences of this when it comes to supporting policies that really lift up historically marginalized communities are very dire.
I'll take that as a yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eskamani. Next, we have David Cullen, the Sierra Club. Waving in opposition. Next, we have Nicole DeVanage with Surfrider Foundation. Waving in opposition. Next, we have Samantha Padgett with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Wanting to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Samantha Padgett. I'm the General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. We rise in support of this good bill. I wanted to speak specifically to the portion of the bill that talks about being able to abate the effectiveness of an ordinance that is challenged. When you have an ordinance where the main claim is one for money damages on behalf of a business, typically an injunction would not be available to that business because that is considered a different adequate remedy at law. So when you're talking about something that would potentially create a great deal of expense for a business, being able to stop the enforcement of such an ordinance even for that period of time would be very significant. So I think that in this case is why that provision is so important, because if you're talking about money damages, purely talking about what the expense would be to that business, an injunction would not be most likely available to that business challenging the ordinance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Padgett. Next, we have John Harris Maurer. You are recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair, committee members, and staff. My name is John Harris Maurer, and I'm the Public Policy Director for Equality Florida, the state's largest civil rights organization focused on securing full equality for Florida's LGBTQ community. Equality Florida is very concerned that, as currently written, House Bill 403 may impact local government's ability to protect their communities, including the LGBTQ community. Local governments have led the way in establishing LGBTQ protections for the betterment of our community. These are critical measures that protect health, safety, and welfare. And we know that the business community supports such measures because they've adopted similar protections internally and have testified about how these sort of local protections help them attract and retain top talent. Local governments should be able to enact ordinances that serve and protect their communities. It's important to have these sort of protections at all local levels of government. While we weren't able to address these concerns with Representative Jill Lombardo before today's meeting, we look forward to the opportunity to meet before this bill advances further. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Maurer. Next, we have David Cullen with the Sierra Club waving in opposition. Next, we have Matthew Choi with the Florida Chamber of Commerce waving in support. Next, we have, you're waving in support again. Timothy Nungesser with the National Federation of Independent Businesses, waving in support. Next, we have Rebecca O'Hare with the Florida League of Cities. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. So first, I want to preface my comments by thanking Representative G. Lombardo for working with us on this bill. I think he alluded to an amendment that's being worked on that's not quite ready for today's meeting. But I wanted to let you know that I'm going to focus my remarks on the things that I think would still be outstanding that would not be addressed in that amendment so as not to take up any unnecessary time. So with that, so there are really four areas that we believe, main areas, there are probably some others, but four main things that would be outstanding if everything that I think we've discussed that might be in that amendment is in that amendment. And so those things are, first of all, as some of the questions have discussed so far, the bill is very broad. It applies to every ordinance. And so when you're a city, there's really two ways you take official action. You can pass a resolution, which has a temporary effect. It's like for commemorative types of things, or you enact an ordinance. That's how cities do what they do. And ordinances don't always affect businesses. There are essentially, I like to think of this as, you know, if you could put ordinances in three buckets, the first bucket would be ordinances that have zero impact on anybody but the internal operation of the city. These would be things like the division of labor between the city manager and the city clerk and the elected body and what their respective roles are. That would be a good example of that type of ordinance. And there are a lot of them. Then the second bucket would be ordinances that affect all persons similarly situated. So basically, ordinances that apply to people or anybody, no matter who you are. You could be a resident, you could be a business, you could be somebody just passing through. Examples of this would be something like a noise ordinance or an ordinance relating to parking or traffic. Those are the things that apply to everybody equally. They're not singling out businesses specifically. The third bucket would be ordinances that are specifically regulating the business community. So if we could get this bill more focused on that third category, it would drastically reduce the fiscal impact of this bill because it would take a lot of the kind of the busy work off the plate of some of the cities and counties or a lot of the cities and counties that will be affected by this. That's a really big deal if you're a small city. Most cities in Florida are under 10,000 in population. So, you know, if you think about it, a lot of these really tiny cities, they only have three employees. They've got a city clerk. They may have a city manager and they've got a police chief. So which of those three is going to be tasked with doing the business impact statement? So fortunately, the amendment that I think is coming is going to streamline the business impact statement requirement and make that a little bit less onerous. But if we could carve out some exemptions for those two categories of ordinances that I mentioned previously, I think that would really, really help little tiny places like LaBelle, like Century, or Lake Helen, or Lake Hamilton. They don't have a lot of people. So if we want this to succeed and have it be done right, let's make sure it's drafted in a way it doesn't cause unnecessary work or increase the fiscal costs unnecessarily. Second thing, the business impact statement itself. The concept is not unreasonable, but it can be simplified, as I mentioned, in order to reduce the costs. I think that's going to be addressed. But we could clarify what the effect of the business impact statement has. Right now, as the bill is drafted, the business impact statement is part of what the judge is tasked with considering in deciding whether or not the ordinance is arbitrary or unreasonable. So right now, the business impact statement has a substantive effect. It's not procedural, it's substantive. What that means is when somebody's litigating over the validity of the ordinance, what they're going to be attacking and arguing about is the sufficiency of the business impact statement. Logically, what that's going to require, each party is going to expert up. Somebody's going to hire a fiscal expert on the plaintiff's side. Somebody's going to hire a financial analyst on the defendant's side at, you know, $300 to $500 an hour for those expert witnesses. Costs are going to add up really quickly. The whole point here is to have cities and counties take a harder look at what they're doing when they pass ordinances and the effect it's going to have on the business community, and that's fine. It should be a procedural requirement only, however. Procedural meaning, did you do it? If you did, great. It's not part of what a judge is going to look at. The judge is just going to make sure that it was done. If you didn't do it, what we're suggesting is that it be grounds to automatically void the ordinance. It's like failure to give proper notice. So that's what we would suggest as the bill moves forward. The other thing is what happens when the ordinance is suspended. I think the amendment is going to put some fences around who can pull that trigger to probably be modeled on something like the Growth Management Act that requires somebody be an affected person before they can challenge a comprehensive plan amendment to have standing. And if that's the direction that the amendment goes in, that will be a good change. The other thing that it can do, however, as was mentioned before, is address the issue of potential frivolous claims, because it doesn't take much, as was noted before, to file a lawsuit. Again, there is a model for this in existing law. If you look at the Growth Management Act, There is language in there that requires somebody to that signs a pleading to affirm that they're not doing it for any improper purpose, such as to cause delay or harass or for some other frivolous meaning. And the other thing that is kind of outstanding here, again, comes down to what the courts are going to look at. Right now, when ordinances are challenged as being arbitrary or unreasonable, courts will apply what's known as the rational basis test. And basically what that is the court will ask local government, what's the objective you're trying to achieve with this ordinance, and are the means that you're using to accomplish that purpose rationally related to that purpose? It's been around for centuries. It's never been tinkered with. It seems to be working pretty well. This bill adds a couple of factors that a court is going to have to look at that's going to add on to that test. Two of the factors that are noteworthy. One is it will require the court to look at the business impact statement. Again, it goes back to that procedural versus substantive issue I talked about. The second thing it does is it requires the court to look at how the ordinance will affect the rights and privileges of the residents in the city or the county. I don't know what that phrase means. Perhaps if we could define it, it might cut down on some additional litigation, and that would be very helpful. But again, going back to having that business impact statement be procedural and not substantive would be a big help. With that, I'll close, not take up any more time, answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Hara. Next, we have Jack Corey with the Village of Tequesta is waiving in opposition. Next, we have Grace Lovett with the Florida Retail Federation. Waiving in support. Thank you. Next, we have Philip Soderman with Americans for Prosperity. Waiving in support. Next, we have Carol Bowen with Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida. And waiving in support. And that concludes our public input. I'm sorry. Please state your name and turn in your card after. You are recognized.
I thought that I had submitted it electronically yesterday, but maybe it didn't go through. I'm Eddie Labrador. I'm here on behalf of the Florida Association of Counties. If you give me just 1 minute. Thanks, I just dropped something, but I'll fill out a card and certainly turn it in. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak. I want to start out by saying thank you to Representative Joe Lombardo. He's been very gracious with his time. We've talked about this particular piece of legislation a couple times, and we've been working with him and Senator Hudson, who's got the companion measure over in the Senate, on making some changes, some good changes to the bill. We are not at 100%, but we're working towards that goal. One of the things that, and I'm not going to, I'm going to focus on some of the areas that Ms. O'Hara, she's talked about those areas already. We agree with her on her comments. So I'm not going to touch there. I'm going to touch some other things that are not going to be addressed in the amendment. And one of those is a definition of business. What is a business? We don't know. It's not defined in the bill currently, and from what I've seen in the cheat sheet, it's not going to be defined there either. So the question is, we think that there should be a definition of business, and it should be something substantially like a trade or occupation that is actively operated for profit and is engaged in conducting business within the jurisdictional boundaries of the county or the city, and will be regulated financially, either regulated directly or financially impacted by the proposed ordinance. That's a definition of business. I think it's not too controversial. I don't believe it leaves anything out, and we should probably include a definition of business. The other thing that in talking about the automatic stay, one of the concerns we have is that even if you leave the automatic stay in, let's say that there is a determination by the court that is the ordinance is valid, whether it's a city ordinance or a county ordinance. The question is, what happens at that point if the business appeals the ordinance? Well, the bill currently says, and this is going to be part of, this is not going to be changing in the proposed amendment, is that it's going to continue to be stayed if it's appealed. And we believe that that shouldn't be. Once the court has declared the ordinance to be valid, it should be able to be enforced. And the stay, the business can apply to the court for the continuation of the stay, but at that point, you need to go to the court and you need to apply for the stay. The state should not travel with an appeal. And that's one of the areas that we'll, obviously continue to talk about, because it's one of the areas that concerns us. The other thing is that Representative Jill Lombardo mentioned this doesn't apply to growth management, building code, emergency ordinances, and fire code. Those are great exceptions, but we're thinking that there should be a few more, some of which will be included, things like budgets, ordinances related to debt and refinancing of debt are going to be included. One of the areas that's not included is those that levy taxes. And that's a concern, because taxes feed into the budgets. And if you can challenge an ordinance that imposes a tax or levies a tax, you can impact the budget of the county or the city. And that is of concern. If we're not going to allow challenges to budgets, then we shouldn't be allowing challenges to the taxes that feed into that. If there are challenges, and now we're talking about under this particular regimen, you can already do, you can, attack your taxes if you're unhappy with the valuation or the millage. That's, you can do that in circuit court. In terms of ad valorem taxes, there's the VAB process that ultimately gets you to the circuit court. So there are avenues of relief already that doesn't need to be doubled down on with this particular bill. This should be for something else and not that. That is it. And we hope to continue working with the good representative and Senator Hudson. And game on.
Thank you, Mr. Labrador. Now we're done with public comment. Members, we are now in debate. Is there anyone wishing to debate on the bill? Representative Bartleman. In debate.
Yes. I did speak with the representative, and he knows how I feel about the bill currently as is. And I know that you're going to work on amending some of the language, and for that I thank you. But I just wanted to give this body some food for thought. Imagine if this statute was imposed on us as a state legislature. Imagine how that would impact our ability to govern and how it would paralyze us. Imagine if in our business and fiscal impact statements, we had to determine how this would impact the other 49 states, any law we pass, how it's going to impact the 49 other states, because that's what this bill does. Not only do they have to have a business impact on how it impacts their local municipality or their local county, you're asking them to say how it impacts other counties. That's an overreach. Number two. Why all the ordinances? That point was made. Why does it have to be every single ordinance? Why not just the ones impacting business? And three, honestly, we would never have a bill enacted in the state of Florida if we had this statute imposed against us, because it takes one person, any person, to file a lawsuit, and there's a stay on that law. So just imagine how that would paralyze state government here in Florida. And that's what we're doing to our local municipal and county governments with this ordinance. It's a problem. I know it's to fix, you say it's because we're going to stop the preemptions and we're going to ensure them home rule, but it takes away all home rule, because effectively no one will be able to govern once one person files a court order. And let's think about all the lawsuits that have been filed against us as a state. By the way, now we have to reimburse all of those taxpayers for their legal fees and what that does to our tax dollars. So when you go back to the table, just think, but for the grace of God, there go I. What if this law was imposed on me, and how can we tighten it up to make it fair and get you to the intended outcome you have? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Robinson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to let Rep. Lombano know that what you said the purpose of this bill was, as far as stopping preemption, I truly would appreciate. However, when we look at the different concerns, this is ultimately a major preemption. I would like to thank Rep. Daly, because he asked a lot of his questions, addressed the concerns and things that I had. One of the things that I definitely want to say is, with this particular bill as it is, I was very happy to hear that you are working with the League of Cities and Counties to make it better, but it has a lot of unfunded mandates on our local municipalities. And being that I have served there and I know how it works, this was just really not be a good thing at this time. So I do hope that you will continue to work with the League of Cities, and I would like to even talk to you some more about this to see if you can make some changes, because as it's written, I could not support it.
Thank you. Representative Cheney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. G. Lombardo, for having so many conversations about this bill. It's obviously very impactful, and a lot of people are concerned about it. In my district, the average city is about 7,000 people, so it would be somewhat burdensome if they had to do financial impact statement on all their ordinances. I was in local government, so I could imagine the issue with that. But having said that, so I can't support the bill in its current state, but I understand all the conversations that you're having and that you're going to continue to have and that you're going to amend this bill. And based on that fact, I'll support it today, and assuming that you do amend it and it, so that it's not so broad and not so vague, then I'll be able to support it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Rep. G. Lombardo, thank you for coming up with the bill. I know you might have good intentions. I don't deny that at all. But at this time, knowing what I'm dealing with in my respective counties and cities, this bill would not be good for them, and also for some other counties and cities throughout the state. At a time now where local governments are dealing with so much, you know, we are facing so many demands from our residents, I can't see in good conscience to try to impose more of a financial burden on them at this time. As you see, there are a lot of concerns about the bill from both sides, and I know you will continue to work with everyone in order to see if we can get to a point where we would feel comfortable with the bill. But at this time, I'm not comfortable with it. I'm sorry, I will not be able to support you at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Daly, you recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll briefly echo some of my colleagues' comments. I enjoy working with Rep. G. Lombardo. It seems like this is this year's home-based business bill, so I look forward to going back and forth with you on it. You know, look, I have a lot of concerns with this bill in its current form, and candidly, and even in talking with the League of Cities and the Association of Counties and you yourself, I know that you're going to continue to work with folks and try and make it a better bill. And I don't know that even at that point, this is good policy for our state because of what we're doing, because of the unintended consequences that I think maybe we haven't fully aired out yet. So I look forward to seeing the different iterations of the bill. I can't get there today. I think the bill is too broad. I think it opens the door to countless litigation claims while adding to the workload of our already overworked judiciary. You know, to your point about a decrease in preemptions, I'm all about it. I love to see a decrease in preemption and in preemption fights up here in Tallahassee. But why is there going to be a decrease? Well, it's because we're shifting. We're shifting the, you know, look, if we're going to do it and we're going to preempt folks, darn it, we should be the ones to do it, right, as the state legislature. We're passing that buck off to the court system. We're basically saying, hey, preemption by litigation is now a thing, so we don't want to be bothered with it. We're just going to let the locals fight it out. And, oh, by the way, cities, you're on the hook for any cost incurred by that. And so that's deeply concerning to me. And so I have a number of concerns. I know that we'll continue to work together on it. I can't get there for you today, but look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Harding, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative G. Lombardo, for the bill. And I think it's clear in all the efforts that you're making that there's, you know, this, the beauty of the process is things can still evolve. That's why we have committee meetings and work through bills. The intent of this bill is really good. And in some of the public testimony, there was comments made that actually were strongly in support. You know, I'm for a local government that is for and protects individual freedoms, that has a free and accountable local government. And this bill, in its intent and where I know it will end up, is going to help improve and ensure that. If a local government implements good policy, is transparent, has public meetings, works with their constituents, we should get better policy, and we shouldn't have to be up here preempting bad policy. We voted on a lot of preemptions last year, and I supported and I co-sponsored, I believe, every one of them that came through here, because every one of them was built on a real issue where local government was not listening to their constituents, had an agenda, had a special interest agenda or a political agenda that brought us to that point where we had to preempt them at the state level. And so that is our duty. I know and I hear the comments regarding local government and home rule, and I appreciate those comments. But our duty and our reason, the reason that we raise our right hand and on the House floor take an oath to our Constitution, is to protect the integrity of why we have a state legislator. And our state legislator provides oversight, funding. We provide funding to local governments, and we have to hold them accountable. That is our duty. We created them, and our job is to hold them accountable. And so I had a comment just because some of the public testimony was good. I think we're right there. I think that's where it's getting missed, is that we want to protect individual freedoms. We want good ordinances. The comment was made that we want good ordinances. I agree. We want good ordinances. Let's pass good ordinances. Let's make sure that the local government is held accountable if they pass bad ordinances. And I believe that's what this bill will seek to address, and I'll be supporting the bill today.
Thank you. Seeing no further debate, Representative Gia Lombardo, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to say to everybody, proponents, opponents, thank you for coming, and it was great working with some of you that reached out to me. I appreciate that. And we did get to chat quite a few times over the phone and talk about different things, and hopefully we can start moving this thing, and as it evolves and informs, we can work together and come to more of an agreeance on it. Rep. Daly, it's also 403, so it's kind of weird, same number, home-based businesses. So. I do want to point out that every bill that we do file has an analysis to it, and as it has a fiscal to it. And I think that's important for the public to be able to see. It's published on our websites. They can see our agendas. They can watch our meetings. They see everything. And if there's issues within it, they can see the analysis, the summary of it. And I think that's a great thing. And I think that also needs to be done at the local level. I think that by doing this shows that transparency, shows that that there's no arbitrary ordinance are being created or unreasonable ones, you know, such as there was one down by my area, not my city, but my area, and it was they wanted to somebody didn't like that construction started so early. So they were like, yeah, they were going to fight, and they were getting the actual vote to not, you're not allowed to do construction in this city till 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, you know, if you're in the construction world, you know that that's not reasonable. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't help the growth of the area. Now, thank God that didn't go into effect. But these are the things that we constantly come up here and have to keep preempting over and over and over. And there's going to be preemption bills this session. There's always preemption bills. You know, so hopefully that when this makes it through, I hope to get your support, and this gets through, that we can, you know, that businesses, that communities can really look at and say, you know, I know how it's going to impact my community. I know what it does. And I know that our local government did their due diligence, and they're telling us, you know, they're giving us the analysis and the feedback on how this impacts us and our daily lives. Because at the end of the day, the constituents, the people that live in these communities, they're the ones who put us in office. We're accountable to them. I'm not accountable to city government employees, to city council. I'm accountable to the people that vote me in. And all those city council members are accountable to the folks that vote them in too. And so being that process is that we have to, when we file a bill or we do anything, transparency, showing them what we're doing, the reason why we're doing it, and how it's going to impact them. So with that being said, I appreciate it, and I hope for your favorable support.
Representative Gia Lombardo, having closed, Tamara, please call roll on the bill.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Nope.
Federhoff? DeLombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcel? Harding?
Yes.
Joseph? Killebrew?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Salzman? Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
No. So,
11 yay, 4 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 403 reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we will take up House Bill 455 by Representative Tobolsky, relating to the Rupert J. Smith Law Library of St. Lucie County. Representative Tobolsky, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Harding and members of the committee. House Bill 455 would increase the number of seats on the Board of Trustees for the Rupert J. Smith Law Library of St. Lucie County from 5 to 6 members and will update the appointment power for each seat. As well as expanding the residential requirement to be within the 19th Judicial Circuit. The Board of Trustees consists of 5 members, a circuit judge, a county commissioner, 2 attorneys, and a lay member. Each seat has its own requirements and assignment of who makes the appointment. The new additional seat would allow for an honorary member to be appointed by the Board of Trustees. And I do have an amendment, Madam Chair.
You are recognized to explain the amendment, barcode 467773.
The amendment changes the designation of the new board member from honorary to lay in order to provide the new member voting rights. And that is the amendment, Madam Chair.
Members, are there questions on the strike all amendment? Seeing none, we receive public comments. Okay. Nicole Fogarty with St. Lucie County waves in support. And you're waving in support again. Thank you. Um, Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the strike all amendment? Seeing none, Representative Tobolsky, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Members, without objection, show the strike all amendment is adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended, and we have, is there any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Tobolsky, you are recognized to close on the bill as amended.
Waive close, Chair.
Having waived close, please call roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby, Bartleman.
Yes.
Yes.
Cheney.
Yes.
Daley.
Yes.
Fetterhoff.
Yes.
DiLombardo.
Yes.
Goff Marcel. Harding.
Yes.
Joseph Killebrew.
Yes.
Mello.
Yes.
Overdorff.
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika. Robinson.
Yes.
Salzman. Smith.
Yes.
Woodson.
Yes.
Yes.
And Chair Toledo, yes. Thank you.
By your vote, please show House Bill 455 reported favorably as amended. And please stay right there and present House Bill 457 relating to St. Lucie County. You are recognized.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. House Bill 457 is a local bill seeking approval of a public and land conveyance from the Board of Trustees of the International Improvement Trust Fund to Indian River State College District Board of Trustees, and that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, there are no public comments on the bill. Members, we are now in debate. Is there anyone wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Waive close.
Having waived close, Tamara, please call roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby. Bartleman.
Yes.
Cheney.
Yes.
Daley.
Yes.
Fetterhoff.
Yes.
DiLombardo.
Yes.
Goff Marcel. Harding.
Yes.
Joseph Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Mello.
Yes.
Overdorff.
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika. Robinson.
Yes.
Salzman. Smith.
Yes.
Woodson.
Yes.
Chair Toledo.
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 457 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Members, thank you for your work today. This concludes our meeting agenda. Our next meeting will be scheduled the first week of regular session. Once we adjourn, please remember to exit promptly so that the sergeant staff can prepare the room. Seeing no further business before the subcommittee, Representative Mello moves, we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.